Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 228th episode of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, coming to y'all on August 13th, 2023, a Sunday. On the podcast, we have a man who would have done great in World War II, Andrew Clark.
That one really caught me off guard. Yeah. You know,
what metric, an arms dealer?
Yeah. What situation would I have done well as the guy that stayed back home and fucked the wives of all the guys that were overseas? Maybe. Would I have done well as the guy that, like, if I got drafted, they'd say, this guy's got some pretty nimble fingers. He can type 60 fucking words a minute. He can type some combat death reports like it's nobody's business. I don't know if I would have done well with the whole going door to door killing people sort of thing.
But
you never know. You know, maybe the war just brings out the real man in you.
I was going to say, like, you, I'm glad you're interpreting that more broadly. But yeah, when I said that in my mind, I was like, hey, Normandy, Andrew would have cleaned up. Andrew would have come up during Normandy.
I don't know, man. They don't recruit guys who are able to, like, think, just like,
yeah,
think outside of any sort of, like, narrow box to be the guys that are going to storm the beach at Normandy. Like, I don't know. I think if you're able to, like, think for even a second about, like, holy fucking shit, I'm going to die.
Yeah,
you're not fit for that.
The whole following orders thing, it needs to get programmed into you in that kind of
deep
a role
level.
Yeah, otherwise they just don't let you do it. They'll probably kill you in training camp. Or they'll like put you in the mess hall or something.
Right. When you are ordered to charge a machine gun pillbox and you know there is a 90% chance you are gonna die,
but if you don't do it, you'll just get court-martialed and executed.
I'll take my chances. Like,
that's I mean.
I would take, like, my chances getting court-martialed and seeing what would happen.
But, like, that's what I'm saying, is the people that do that, like, it there is no hesitation, because that is worse to them.
They've been,
like,
programmed.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I don't want to get Tillmanned, but I really don't want to storm Normandy. I get it. That doesn't make sense yet with this timeline. When it happens, though, trust
me,
that will
your grandkids will love it. That one might have been a little too soon for you. Your grandkids will love it.
It's just a guy sitting in France after the invasion smoking a cigarette. Man, what fucking Henry Kissinger is doing in Vietnam right now. What are you talking about? Who the fuck is Henry Kissinger?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, you need to subscribe to my zine. You got all the hottest stuff on there, really for people in the know, you know.
Yeah, he's just some dude who was, like, getting beat up by Nazis in the street the other day. It's chill. He'll be a big deal later.
Maybe immortal, surprisingly immortal. Less mortal than you would expect, at the very least.
He made a deal with the devil at some point. That's the only explanation.
To this day, immortal. Has yet to be proven mortal.
Everybody's immortal until they're not.
Yeah. It's Schrodinger's cat. We all are immortal until someone checks and sees whether we're mortal or not, whether that be cancer or a person with a gun.
I'm going to need you to roll for a mortality check.
Yeah, mortality check.
I'm
going to need a 10 to pass.
Nat 4. You stepped in front of the bus without thinking, and it did kill you.
Yeah, you are mortal. You are mortal. We've solved it.
Super mortal.
I mean, listen, I got hit by a car like a year ago. That was fine. So that at least, immortal against cars.
Yeah,
and getting, like, love tapped by a car at an intersection is the same as getting hit 60 miles an hour by a bus.
I'm building up a tolerance to it. A little by little.
You're seeking it out. You're like,
iocane.
Yeah, you've got a fucking radar gun, and you're like, he's going about 15. All right, step it up a little bit. Nimble up, see what's up.
Yeah, and we all know that breaking bones and internal organs, they'll just heal up stronger.
Yeah, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
It's not
That's always universally true.
Yeah.
Also on the pod today, we have the best fantasy football commissioner in the game, Ryan Holtz.
I don't know, man. Some of those commissioners go pretty hard. I went hard in some of the early days. I made some hype videos and stuff like that, but I don't know. I do my best.
What are y'all's expectations going into a 10-man league season?
I've played in a 10-man league for, God, like 13 years now. My other fantasy football league is a 10-man, and I think it's the best balance where you get genuine skill on every roster, but not like loaded. Like
depth matters more than it would before. And yeah, you're much less likely to have the super teams that have top three guys in every position.
In an 8-man, a lot of times you're usually struggling to figure out who you're going to start. Like, there might be a couple of guys that are kind of flex worthy. Usually in a 10 team, you've got your starters and then you've got your backups. Like, you it'd be a luxury to have someone on your bench who's like a starter.
I was going to ask if, like, 10 man leagues, if there's just the dominance that would emerge in our previous 8-man league, just like, this is the games, whatever it happened. Like, by week 6, you're usually like, oh yeah, this team is for sure going to the playoffs, like, and likely to win it all.
Like, it's a lot rarer, to have like a super team where it's like someone has a top two player in every position, and it's just like, they're going to be unstoppable. So.
I'm also thinking about raising in the sports channel in my work Slack. If, like, hey, do we have an office fantasy league? Do we want one of those? Are people interested in that? But I don't know how to do that without, like,
you'd be the guy
yourself as a normal person. Yeah.
You would be the guy from there.
Oh, that's what you mean,
right? No. I don't think I got it in me, gang.
It's tough. It's not easy, and also you're gonna have to like turn people down. Because honestly, beyond 12, it gets pretty fucking messy. So unless you only have less than that, but if it's a whole office thing.
The office was probably short selling it. This is like company wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did an office fantasy league a couple years back, and it was like a 14 team auction draft, and it was a fucking shit show nightmare. But then also, because there were so many teams and it was auction based, half the teams just had literally nobody worth a goddamn son of a bitch and like gave up after like week 3 because they're like, oh, I've already lost. There's no chance to do anything here.
Yeah. You got to get your guys, especially in a 14 league. Jesus Christ. You just have to pay a premium for one stud and then fill out the rest of your team with trash. That's the only option.
Also, hello. I am Lucas DeRuyter. What do I have going on? What's a thing I can say for myself?
A man who would have done really well in the Vietnam War.
I would have gotten weird during Vietnam, I think.
Yeah, again, what does that mean? I don't know. Take it however you want.
Yeah, I mean, are we talking like Charlie Sheen's dad in Platoon?
Someone really good with a flamethrower? Or are we talking someone who would be a great revolutionary in the counterculture? I don't know. You take it however you want.
You know that guy in the American jumpsuit yelling profanities in Forrest Gump?
Sure.
I could do that. That'd be me. You. Yeah.
Be an Uncle Sam cosplay.
That's what you consider doing great in Vietnam. Yeah. Not fighting you. I just want to know. That's what you mean.
The thing to consider about this, both World War II and the draft was a thing. So, like, I don't know where I would end up. Like, the choice is not mine in some regard. So, I think I'd just be making the most of it, no matter where I was.
Yeah. What branches of the military like don't? Are there ones that like don't take draftees? Like you could have still gotten drafted into the Air Force, right? But you would have just
my grandpa, like, to avoid the draft, just join the Air Force. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people did that, and they're just like, well, if it's an inevitability, I'm going to take the one that you don't die a lot.
There are, because most positions in the Air Force, if I'm correct about this, they're like auxiliary positions. Like, you are maintaining machinery
There's not that many combat positions at the end of the day.
And you're definitely not going to put like a drafty in the cockpit of a fighter jet.
Where would you want? Yeah, like you're talking about like 30 guys, like the top of the top, basically.
No, me doing well in Vietnam is I'm in the Air Force. I get shot down. I refuse to rat out my colleagues, though. The other guys in the ship.
And they grow bamboo into your fingernail beds.
Yeah. But then
and they
I come
eat your friends.
But then I come back home, use that to get a long-term senatorial role, and then make a play for president and hitch my wagon onto governor in the weirdest state who I have know nothing about, and everything's chill, everything works out for me.
And then kind of approve of Obamacare and then die.
Then I get My Way played at my funeral, except in my version it's the punk rock one. Who's that band?
Alien Ant Farm. I don't know.
Nope.
Who did a cover of My Way? Johnny Cash.
I think he might have, actually. But
oh, really? I was picturing like a Hurt style, like depressed. And through it all. Just like really.
The Sex Pistols?
Yeah,
and Sid Pistols. Vicious. I mean, a lot of people have done covers of that song. But
in the Philippines, you get shot if you sing karaoke. The My Way murders.
I heard about that.
Yeah, you gotta watch out. Don't do it.
No, Alien Ant Farm was Smooth Criminal.
Yeah, no, I was joking.
Now, what is that other?
Weezer? No, I don't know. Weezer did a cover of every old song.
I looked up
punk
rock My Way, and Sid Vicious and the Sex Pistols both made covers of My Way. Huh. So I'm thinking it might be either of those.
But I think there's a different song that says like My Way a lot, but it's not called My Way, and it's impossible to look up.
It's not Frank Sinatra's My Way.
Not Frank Sinatra. My Way.
Just gonna be covers of My Way. It's not gonna be another song that says My Way a lot. I don't even know how to find that. You go on Spotify and search My Way and look for other results, but
they're all gonna be that song.
Yeah, they're all just gonna be covers. I can't imagine how you find it. Calvin Harris? Is that it?
Oh no, by Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit.
Yes, at my funeral in this hypothetical situation where I'm a Vietnam War veteran, I'm playing My Way by Limp Bizkit.
A song that won't come out for another 25 years, at least.
No, his funeral happened in, what, like 2020? When did McCain die?
Oh, okay.
He's John McCain in this scenario.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I forgot that.
John McCain never saw COVID. Weird.
Did he not?
I don't think so.
When did John McCain die?
What if he was
2018? Yeah.
He was the first one to die of COVID.
In 2018.
Yeah.
He died of COVID-19 in 2018. He's just a real hipster.
Taking the form of brain cancer.
Yeah. It's that fucking vaccine, man. Look at all of our people. They're dropping.
So, okay. This morning I was doing my weekly spin around of, checking out what Fox News looks like just to keep tabs on them. And again, like Fox News news site, like foxnews.com.
Yeah.
Obviously has their right wing spin on everything, but the psycho shit doesn't really get in there that often. Although sometimes it does. But one of the top headlines that they had, it was like third or fourth down, was the true effects of the vaccine in pregnant women finally come to light in like damning report or some shit like that. So I clicked on it And it was like, and it turns out it's pretty good. The efficacy in pregnant women is even stronger than in non-pregnant women. Right. And it turns out that they can pass the antibodies to the fetus, meaning that children born while, you know, while they're, or after their moms got the COVID-19 vaccine, were born with immunity. Yeah. And it's like, oh, what? Obviously, they're just hoping that people don't click on the article and see the title. But it's like, Jesus fucking Christ. How can you phrase it like that with the content of the article being completely different?
Okay, for the first time in my adult life, I've gone to foxnews.com. Immediately, I got the, hey, will you please turn off your ad blocker thing? Yeah, which I think I might be the only human being to ever see that looking at Fox News. Wow, this is like, these are tabloid level headlines from what is supposedly a major news organization. Biden surrenders America for the sixth time and the excuses don't add up. Like, there's no...
Surrenders America.
And that is an op-ed piece, to be fair. But like, I don't even know what that means. I don't, and that doesn't make me want to click on the article to make it, to like make me find out either. That's just, and then right below that, armed woman flips the script on man holding her husband at gunpoint. And this is small town shit. This is not.
This is porn for them.
Yeah.
No. I mean, in their mind, yeah, there are North Korean tanks on the steps of the White House. And Biden came out waving a white flag and signed over the United States.
Oh, my God. Halfway down the page. See it. NASCAR drivers get in heated brawl after race escalates tension. They literally have, like, check out this fight. Check out this fight on the head of Fox News.
Good stuff, man.
And speaking of Fox News, moving into news of the week. IGN put out a very Fox Newsy just asking questions video about why Baldur's Gate 3 is so good and microtransaction free and other games aren't, not realizing that they're angry at capitalism and not game developers. This is very, it's weird to see like a consumer rights, Gamergate-y style video from IGN in 2023.
Yeah. So what are they claiming why it's so good? Because it's like about men or what?
They're not even, the video doesn't posit why Baldur's Gate 3 is so good. It's just angry at game developers who are like saying that, hey, like Baldur's Gate 3 is a situation that's very unique. Like this game was in early access for 3 years. Like this game had a lot of time and a steady stream of revenue to be like this good and this polished. And that's why all games aren't like this. And the expectation that they are is just not tenable under like the model of game production that most major publishers currently allow.
And isn't then Baldur's Gate 3 was in early access for like years at this point?
Yeah, no. And like they were selling that game for $60 that entire time.
Right. So and it's just like now they've released it. And it's good.
Right.
And there's no bugs because, yeah, they had it in early access for years and years. And people could buy it early if they wanted with the knowledge that, like, hey, it's unfinished. And then they've actually had a full release and everyone's buying it. And everyone's like, hey, it's good. And most game companies either just leave it in early access forever or release an unfinished piece of shit.
Piece of shit.
And not really much in between.
I also like in the video that the dude repeatedly says, I'm not a game developer, but, and then proceeds to act as though
how
he's
can game developers
anything.
Just release bad games?
It's so easy.
And it's just like, he's asking questions that if you've been in the game space for any amount of time, like, they've already been answered, or you can just logic your way to a... Why do so many games today have microtransactions in them? And it's like...
Money.
Because they're... yeah, they're one, really money. Expensive to make, and two, like, publishers want to make all the money. Like, in the late-stage capitalism hellscape that we are in, making like a good amount of revenue isn't enough. And like nobody on like the executive suite is going to say no to including an option incentives to make infinite money from a project, from a release. It's dumb.
And it's like half of these games nowadays are releasing for free with like the caveat of, yeah, there's microtransactions and that's how we're going to finance this game. But it's all like speculative in the future. Right now, the game is free. So it might not be the best game because they're relying on future revenue instead of like revenue that is being developed by the cost built into the game. I mean, also, game prices just went up for the first time in like 15 fucking years. The video games that we were buying a year ago were the same price as the ones we were buying in like freshman year of high school. That's insane.
Yeah.
But the cost going into them was obviously higher. And yeah, there's like that time crunch of, yeah, we want the revenue cycle to start as early as possible. So get this game out now, not 9 months from now when you fixed it now.
And like that's even a dimension that doesn't appear in the video whatsoever of like, hey, Baldur's Gate 3. This is a Dungeons & Dragons game. This looks like a Dungeons & Dragons game. It's not attempting to be hyper-realistic or have insane graphical effects beyond like, yeah, we're kind of making D&D a thing here. We're kind of bringing that to life in this game. And that's such a resource drain, such a money drain, and also an increasingly common expectation among the shittiest of gamers who are also the most vocal. So I don't know. I feel bad calling this out because like I increasingly know people at IGN and interface with them and like don't want to shit on this outlet, but like, hey, bad video. Not good, not productive, not great for the art form. Yeah. Something that's also not great is casino company Penn Entertainment is paying ESPN $2 billion to advertise its sport betting and slap the ESPN brand on its sports book. So much for the integrity of any game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Disney has discovered infinite money glitch.
Yeah.
And they're going to ride it all the way to the end.
Yeah. The fact that ESPN will be able to help shape the narrative of the games going in and during them that could have impacts on how bettors are placing their bets and then also reaping the money from those bets is kind of fucked.
This is a broader question, and maybe this new story like happening makes me reach a conclusion already. You guys watch ESPN way more than I do. Is ESPN good anymore?
I don't really watch any ESPN, to be honest.
I used to watch like half an hour to an hour of ESPN in the morning before work. But now that my work starts an hour or so earlier, I don't. So, yeah, ESPN was always kind of the, and now we're going to get a couple of people that are going to have wildly opposite but equally extreme views on this random thing that isn't really that big of a deal. And they're going to argue about it. And then we're also going to do the exact same conversation 4 days in a row.
And now they just have Stephen A.
It's the Stephen A. model. He's wildly popular for a reason. That kind of bled into the rest of the medium. He's not the only guy that does it. He's not like behind how this works. But yeah, the people talking about sports on ESPN sometimes have like really nuanced views, but then there's people that are on there because they're like, whoa, this is crazy, he said this or he did this clearly means blah 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 blah, and then someone else would be like, I gotta disagree with you, it's blah 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 blah, and then we'll talk about this tomorrow again.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, this is kind of where the sports world is with legalized sports gambling. Like, it is the money. It is, I don't know. I don't think that there's any putting the Pandora back in the box. I don't know if that's how it works, right? Pandora's inside Pandora's box, right? That's the idea.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you can put the lid back on. Like, I don't think that we can now make sports betting illegal, but yeah, I don't know. These are the consequences. This is why it was illegal for so long. These exact reasons, these exact moral issues that brings up. So,
speaking of, did you guys see this shit about Phil Mickelson?
Yeah.
No.
And Phil Mickelson is like kind of an admitted gambling addict, like an intense gambling addict. And some people have come forward and estimated that he has placed over $1 billion in sports bets over the last, like, what was it, like 20 years or something? Including like a couple of different times where he's bet like, you know, $20 million on shit and then lost it. And he's like tried to bet on golf matches
that he's
shit
in.
That he's participated in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's the big issue there, is because that's highly illegal. But
right.
Yeah, right. Like that's fucking nuts. $1 billion.
Yeah. That's why he plays golf, to fund his gambling addiction. Straight up. That's why he went to LIV, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Had to follow that money. Yeah.
No, he did it so he had a once in a lifetime opportunity to change the game of golf. If I recall correctly, the actual, like, oh, this is the actual reason that makes sense, that he was cited as, was apparently with the PGA, he was giving up licensing rights to the PGA essentially whenever he would appear in major tournaments, and he wanted a cut of that.
Yeah, so he could then
gamble. Yeah,
gamble it all the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, while we're dragging ESPN quick, I read this article, didn't include it here, but I can bring it up now. Y'all know ESPN announcer Colin Cowherd?
Yeah. Colin Cowherd. He's a fucking menace.
He did a bit like ranking, like, oh, these are the best and worst, like first round draft quarterbacks of the past.
Yeah.
He just listed a dead guy.
Yeah.
He just included a dead guy and never going to get to a Super Bowl with this guy.
Yeah, it was like, here's the kinds of quarterbacks that you can't win a Super Bowl with, which, by the way, it's not even like interesting, because he listed guys like Nathan Peterman and Marcus Mariota, guys that like aren't even on football teams. He listed a couple of retired guys.
They were draft picks. That was the idea. It was like people who have been drafted since X date.
Oh,
here's all the people that you can't win a Super Bowl with that have been drafted since this date.
Yeah.
So yeah, he listed everyone, and yeah, probably should have
not taken put off Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
Got hit by a car over a year ago.
Yeah. Like retired guys, I see how it still fits the bit that it's like, look at all these drafted people that you can't win with because they're bad, like they're not good at football. So here we are.
I don't, man, maybe there's too much sports coverage. Maybe ESPN should just like turn off in the month of August. Like that'd be fine.
Yeah. I mean, while we're on it, did either of you watch the first episode of Hard Knocks?
No.
I downloaded it so that I can watch it on the plane tomorrow.
I did watch it. I'm sad that I gave in and watched it, honestly. But it is interesting, you know, like it's always, Hard Knocks is always interesting to see what's going on behind the scenes. But obviously with the Jets, that's the closest thing we're going to have to a Packers Hard Knocks, because they're never going to put the Packers on there.
It sounds like next year. I know that
shot. We'll never let it happen. It's definitely not as long as Mark Murphy is the president of the team.
Yeah, but they don't really have, like, at the end of the day, they don't really have the final say in it.
Because we're the Packers, we do. Like, I'm not saying we should have that power, but we do have that power. We have exercised it before, and we will again. And unless we get some new hotshot president who's like, no, this will grow the brand. Like, nah, we're never going to be fucking on that shit.
I know that there's like some things you have to do to be able to qualify for it. And there was only like four teams that qualified for it this year. It was like the Packers, the Jets, the Washington football team. I know they're the Commanders, but I don't give a
shit. No, they're not. And
other team. And they were like, well, it's going to be either the Jets or the Packers. And Murphy was like, it's not going to be us. And the Jets were like, it's not going to be us either. And then they're like, yeah, it is. But I know, like, so we might not even qualify for it next year because you got to have like a certain record and you can't have made the playoffs like 2 years in a row and you can't have a first year head coach, shit like that. So,
yeah.
That's interesting that they only want the proven bad teams on
That's the whole point.
That's the idea.
That's why it's called Hard Knocks. It's about like teams trying to claw back into relevancy.
Wait, that's not like an Annie reference?
No, what? No. Annie didn't invent the phrase Hard Knocks.
And as well as Hard Knock. Hard Knock Life.
She popularized it at least.
I don't know if she did.
Yeah, I think that was just a common phrase.
It's a Hard Knock Life. Like, I think, I don't know. Hard, like the school of the Hard Knocks. That almost sounds like a separate thing. That feels like out of hip hop culture.
Yeah, Hard Knock University. Yeah. I think people refer to certain things as that.
Education, I guess, from life and experience. Oh, so it's like, here's what these teams are learning from being dog shit. Okay.
The best moments are like when they are clearly going to be very bad again this year, and yet everyone has to pretend that like they're really excited. Because like, yeah, this year the Jets are probably going to be at least decent if they're not like horribly injured, you know, like they're going to be at least in the hunt for a playoff seed. Like there's like they had the Browns in the middle of their 0-16 like crazy drought when they went like 1-31 in two seasons, like, and it, in between, I think they had just went 1-15 and they were about to go 0-16 or vice versa. I don't remember.
Yeah.
And it was pretty fucking bad, man. Oh, everyone was so bad.
Because they went 0-16 and then they lost 15 in a row.
Yeah.
And they won like the last game of their season, like on a last minute field goal. And everyone went fucking bonkers.
Yeah. Because Hugh Jackson was the head coach and Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator. And he was really pissed that Hugh Jackson was letting all these starters like take time off during practice and not practicing and everything. And he's like, oh, it's an injury. We're trying to cut down on injuries and everything. And Todd Haley's like, what the fuck? We're really bad. We need as much practice as we can get. And Hugh Jackson's like, well, I'm the coach. And he's like, it's easy for you to say from that seat that we should be doing that, but my word is final. And then they were very bad again.
Speaking of football, not NFL, but also weird stuff in football. Can either of you explain to me what's going on with the Pac-12 right now?
Oh, they don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just I genuinely, mean, the conference is gone.
They exist in name only. There's like, what, three or four teams left?
I think more teams left. I think they might be down to like one or two that are clearly gone. Yeah. Like they're going somewhere. It's just no one knows where.
Yeah, and there was a couple teams that were then trying to leave because they had to, obviously, and they didn't get accepted where they were trying to go. And like, wait, we're supposed to be a Power 5 school. What the fuck?
No.
We don't want to go to the FCS.
No, but how does that happen? How does a football conference just dissolve?
It's nuts.
It's happened before, but it is crazy that we're doing it now. They
were really confident that they were going to get the shit done that they needed to. I remember reading an article about it and they're like, yeah, the commissioner went to bed with a deal in principle to like with Apple to like stream all their games. And then also like the teams that were trying to like get their contract to stay in that conference, they were like good to go and they just needed to get approved. And he said he woke up the next morning to like the headline of like Arizona and I forget who the other team was, like fucking signed with the Big Ten.
Is it Arizona? Oregon and Washington.
Yeah.
And they're joining USC and UCLA who have already left. So
yeah. And he was like, oh, what the fuck? And then like later that day, a couple more teams jettisoned themselves because, again, they had to. There wasn't any reason to stay.
Yeah.
Okay,
all
so
the big
it was.
Teams are gone.
There was a series of contracts and kind of coming due at the same time, and none of them worked out in a cohesive way. Okay.
Not even that. It's just like the Big Ten poached their best teams.
Yeah.
The Big Ten, in order to compete with the SEC, who's expanding, poached the best teams from the Pac-12. And so then it was like, are we going to be a shitty conference without any actual good teams, or are we going to leave too?
It was a bit of a domino effect because we as in the Big Ten, like Ryan said, poached their best teams. And once those guys were gone, then everyone else had to make the decision of, do we hold on to this, like, obviously inferior conference that is still a conference, or do we leave and render it not a conference anymore?
Yeah.
And yeah, they chose to leave.
Did you guys see the Missouri football coach kind of go off on like a long rant about it and how, like,
no.
Basically, he was like, cool, this is like, I get it. Like, college football, you know, like, it's not what it used to be. These NIL deals and everything like that. Like, I'm a football coach. I understand everything going on. Here's the bullshit. Like, think about the other sports. Like, he's just like, think about like volleyball. Think about like rowing. Like, these kids aren't flying chartered planes and making millions of dollars. Like, the kid in fucking Washington is gonna have to fly a like public commercial jet
to fucking Rutgers University
to
play a basketball
literally all
game.
The way across the country to play, yeah, not even basketball, like to fucking shot putt, and then all the while maintaining their studies and like probably staying there for like a couple nights and everything like that, and then fly back to like go to one night of practice and maybe one day of classes, and then fly out again. Because like that's the reality of like a situation with a travel schedule like that. Like, he's just like, it doesn't work for any of the other conference, like any of the other sports. People are just thinking about, yeah, like football and maybe to a lesser extent basketball. Like, it's not, it makes zero sense. And someone proposed, like, why is it not, like, why does college football just like not have conferences anymore? Because like they're a joke anyway with the playoff.
Yeah.
Like,
why can't they be separate?
Yeah, just make college football, everyone's independent. You make your own schedule, and then at the end of the year, we have the college football playoffs and the bowl games and everything. And every other sport stays in the regional-based conferences where they make sure the schedules don't get insane and all that stuff. Like, it makes
sense. It's got to be the broadcasting and streaming rights. Like,
but you could bundle them together still without having it be a conference, you know, where like all of a sudden your school has committed. It's kind of like everyone had a very inside the box way of thinking about it, because of, like, here's the way we always did it with the conferences. But meanwhile, everything else has changed and conferences are kind of obsolete in football and basketball. Like, they don't really matter that much. So yeah, I don't know, man. It's fucking bonkers to think about. And yeah, there was like, I've seen people on TikTok that are just like, I was a collegiate swimmer, and like, fuck, like, they were like, it was really bad when we had to, like, when we were in Oregon and we had to go down to LA, like, we were like, that was rough on us swimmers. I cannot imagine, like, literally traveling across the entire country on a weekly basis. Like, that is impossible. So
a lot of these people in like the lower revenue generating sports are probably still going to be on like coach buses.
No.
Like, they might not even like get on, you know, public flights. They're just going to be on a goddamn bus for 30 hours and then try to play a sport.
So
won't someone think of the children genuinely?
Yeah, that, but unironically, the actual children who are, yeah, like, they're not getting paid at all.
No.
Like,
yeah.
These are just like, I don't know. We went to school with people on like the rowing team and some of the other, like, yeah, they're college students.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
Like, they're not really student athletes in the same way that people on like the football team or the basketball team or even like the volleyball team were, you know, like, they're just students who happen to also play sports in college. Like,
yeah,
they don't get any of the shit that actually the superstar athletes get in the big sports.
Because even with the NIL deals, like, you look at the higher, you know, publicity sports like football and basketball. Yeah. And like you said, like some of the teams that are like really good, like Wisconsin's volleyball team or like, yeah, you
Wisconsin's
know,
women hockey team or yeah, something
like though, you know, the absolute studs are going to be getting NIL deals in like football and, you know, basketball, but even like the studs in, you know, the softball team aren't going to be getting any money. But then the people that are on the, you know, not studs in those bigger sports are also not getting any NIL money. But yeah, so like you're going to be like, no, it's fine. I'm cool taking a chartered flight. I'm getting paid $20,000 for this shit. But the other people on the team aren't, and they've still got to go through it too. But then, yeah, you've got the sports where nobody's making any money.
Right.
And they don't have prospects in the future of making up the money. So they still have to be students.
Right.
And like get their careers on track. And it's, yeah, it's not fair.
The ideology, I would say, is the difference. Like with, mm-hmm. with a college football player, if you talk to them, like, are you going to make it to the pros? I would say 90 to 95% are like, yeah, I'm going to play in the NFL. Like they're, that's the mindset, you know, is I am going to be a professional athlete. This is a stopping point for me on my way to becoming a professional athlete. Whereas, yeah, like if you're playing collegiate softball, it's not really like a pro softball, you know, like the mindset's completely different. Like, yeah, like what we said with like the people we knew on the rowing team,
mm-hmm.
like they're not, I'm going to be a professional rower. Like they're like, no, I'm here to get my degree and I'm also going to row while I do it. And maybe I have some level of a scholarship in order to do that. Like it's the mindset's completely different. Like even if you're not making any money in your brain, you're like, yeah, but I'm going to show up in practice. I'm going to kill it. Coach is going to notice me. I'm going to be a starter. I'm going to make some crazy pick six. Some scout's going to be like, what the fuck? Look at this guy. I'm going to be a first round draft pick. I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to make millions of, you know, like that's, it's just different for sure. Even if it's delusional, it's different.
And then they go up against a future two-time Pro Bowler. And over the course of that game, their identity is irrevocably changed.
Oh, man, I don't belong here. Are you telling me everybody plays like that in the NFL? God damn it, son of a bitch.
There are levels to this, and everyone hits their level. Like, that was me in high school when I had to block fucking James Noctegal, who, like, went on to be, like, a starter at Army. You know, he wasn't even, like, all-conference or anything. Just, like, a starter, like, a good player, you know? And I was just like, I'm not built like this guy. Like, that's like, I always consider myself pretty athletic. You go to block this guy and you're just like, he's too fast and too strong. And it's like that level where you like touch and it's like, oh no, like I've made a mistake. And at one point I was like, all right, here's what I got to do. I just got to stay in front of him because he's way faster than me. And I'm like, but he's stronger than me. And I'm like, I'll figure that out later as long as I stay in front of him. So I stayed in front of him and he proceeded to lock his hands under my shoulder pads, like stand me up straight to where I had no leverage and ran me backwards about 15 yards until I tripped over my teammate and like kind of threw him over my shoulder. Like just as a pure show of force, he was like, I'm just going to drive you like you're a car. Like, and there is nothing you can do to stop me. Then it was like, so yeah, at some level, people run into that in college too, where they're like, oh, this guy's on that other level where I am no longer capable of competing.
Oh no, all this time and effort I've put into developing this skill, this craft, has only allowed me to realize how much better this other person is at it than I am.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's like you look at those like red shirt seniors that like who would win 5 years of training and dedication and 350 pounds or one fast, muscly boy?
Yeah. Some fucking Braylon Allen, 17-year-old true freshman, just making it
look
stupid
easy. I went to college early. And,
yeah. Just... I reclassified because I was too freakishly good and it would be a waste for me to play another year of high school football. So I'm here now and I'm kicking your ass and there's nothing you can do to stop me. Some people just built different, you know?
Built better.
Yeah.
Built weird, man.
I mean, we're seeing it. Look at what's his name on the Reds? Ellie De La Cruz. It's just like, oh, in baseball, it's different. You know, you got to spend 3-4 years in the minors. Then maybe you'll be like a prospect who like gets some play in the majors, but like, you know, not really a starter. And then Ellie De La Cruz is like, what if I was just arguably the best outfield player in the MLB right away? As a, I think he's 18. He might, I he's either 18 or 19, right? Ellie De La Cruz.
He's 21.
Okay, he's 21.
That's still really young to be playing in the majors.
You know,
the Brewers got a guy like that. He's 18 years old, and like they're saying, he's gonna be on the team next year.
There you go.
It's fucking weird.
That's what you need.
We also need to talk about what we've been checking out in the breakouts. What are you guys doing? I got something I'm mad about that like I will go off about, but I want to buffer that with something y'all are checking out.
What have I watched since we last spoke? I mean, Barbie, but I think that's a discussion for the group chat.
Okay.
Fuck.
I mean, Barbie's kind of a highlight. If we want to group chat this, if we just want to be three cis white men talking about Barbie on a podcast, I am very much looking forward to that.
Utter woke trash. Just bringing out Ben Shapiro.
I watched, I'm watching Big Brother. That started. One of the house guests said the N-word and got kicked out.
Ooh.
So that's good.
Wait, by the other house guests or by like the rules of Big Brother? Okay.
No, sorry. Yeah, by the rules. Yeah,
okay. No.
Like he was removed. He violated the Big Brother code of conduct, which back in the day, would not have happened.
No.
But lately, they've been a little bit better about that. So, yeah, no, he was just like, in a room with a white guy, an Arabic guy, and a black guy. And he was just like, all right, we in the blank house, blank. And everyone was just like, what? The what now? And then he left. So.
Damn.
Yeah. You think? That's been the crazy stuff there.
I didn't know they were watching me.
Yeah, he did. He immediately was like,
I know, like the show's called Big Brother. The whole point of it is that they're always being watched.
No, but he like knew immediately, like, I'm gone, aren't I? I don't know when, but that's about it for old Luke.
I wonder if he had a strategy. I wonder if he thought that would play differently or...
No, he clearly let it slip. Like,
wow.
Again, like, it's the same thing with when PewDiePie said it. It's just like, yeah, I get it. Well, no, actually, PewDiePie was very hateful. I'm trying to remember who said it that wasn't, like, it slipped out. And it's just like, cool. Like, yeah, you might not have meant it in a super hateful way, but it means that that's, like, in your everyday vocabulary.
Right, yeah. No, like, when it slips out, like, that means that it's there on the tip of your tongue. Right. It's like shit. I say shit too much
exactly.
Because it's in my repertoire. I say it all the time. So it like slips out in any sort of situation.
Right. In a professional context, sometimes it slips out and you're like,
ooh, fuck. Didn't mean to say that.
Oh shit. Fuck. God damn it. Wait, no.
Yeah. If that word slips out, you're saying it or at least thinking it a lot.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the issue. That's the core issue. So, oh, well. That was fun.
Nah.
I'm watching Archer. I decided to like catch up on that because I saw that the season that comes out in a couple of weeks is going to be the final season. So I thought I didn't watch like the last season and a half. So I'll try to get back into that just for old time's sakes. And they're really trying to go back to the whole like, you know, this is like season 15 of Archer.
Right.
Archer's an old show. And when it first came out, the whole premise was like, it's a workplace comedy, but the joke is that what's happening in the workplace is like spy and murder shit.
Yeah.
And they kind of like got back to that, but it's like, you know, it's 15 years later. So it's like, you know, all the references and like problems that they're facing are like modern corporate workplace culture bullshit. And like, so it hits a little closer to home than maybe it did 15 years ago when we were kids watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, I mean, it's just not as good as Archer was, you know, 10 years ago. Still funny.
I was going to say that, first off, I was going to say that they did that already. They did like a couple of seasons where they aren't spies anymore, and then they went back to being spies for like a season.
Well, yeah, they did a couple seasons where they weren't spies anymore and they were doing other shit. Then they had a couple of seasons where it was like Archer's weird coma dreams where right. They were just like, it's a noir mystery. It's sci-fi. They're in the jungle. It, you know, it's whatever. And then he came out of the coma and it was like actual like two seasons of this is a spy comedy, none in like the workplace kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're back in like the they got acquired and now there's like some, you know, corporate mogul that owns them and tells them what to do. So there's like a bunch of, you know, corporate-y BS going on. So like they now it is an office place comedy again where there's like some spy stuff going on in the background. It's just, you know, it's still funny. It's just not as good.
Have you watched like the stuff that was peak Archer lately?
I've seen all of it. Like,
well, yeah, but like lately, like in the last year, have you gone back to like the good Archer? Is it our tastes have changed?
Possible. Like I might try to get back into, if I like want to do something for 20 minutes where I have time, I might watch an episode of Archer instead of going on my phone for 20 minutes. So maybe I'll let you know. It's entirely possible that it was never as good as we thought it was, or just that our tastes have changed and it's exactly the same as it was.
Does it still feel, I don't know. Because the early seasons of Archer, even though it released in like 2009, that felt about as, yeah, this is capturing the 2010s, the early 2010s, as well as like any piece of media could. Does current Archer still feel like of the moment? Does it feel like, yep, this is getting what it's like living in 2023?
No, I mean, like, I think it's really trying, but it's not quite nailing it. It's kind of like they're just throwing in a lot of references to like, oh yeah, culture building, and like, ooh, that provider's not in network with our health plan, and yeah, like mental health is just as important as physical health because we need you mentally well so you can work harder and make us more money, like, you know, that kind of shit. There's mostly just a lot of references instead of like capturing like that real feeling. Maybe I'm just digging too much into it and it never was that deep.
That's fair.
Is Jedi Survivor deep?
Yeah, it is pretty deep. Okay. Like it is a fun game. Like I just finished it last night. I had a really good time playing it. There's a lot of like really deeply like upsetting and emotional moments in it that I wasn't really expecting that hit pretty hard. You know, for like, you know, oh, this silly little Star Wars universe, Jedi Survivor, and even like the last game, like still maintained that feeling of like, wow, this is cool, but like also hit pretty hard. And it's just fun to play. Like all the different lightsaber stances that you have, the way the combat works is really fun. I know I said it
too first is the lightsaber stances.
Well, I mean, they're pretty good. That's the game.
They're pretty good.
Well, that's the combat mechanic is like the way you change the lightsaber stance, like because then it changes how the attacks work and how defense and offense works and that kind of stuff.
Ryan, what if you had a lightsaber and a gun?
Yeah, dude. Mm. What if you just had both?
Wow. Yeah. You have no weaknesses. Yeah. How do they balance it?
You know, different amounts in like range, like how far your like attacks can reach, and then how much blocking you can do before you run out of block. Like how you can like throw this lightsaber and the different like force ability shit you can use in the different stances.
I do sometimes find it fun though when like the developers don't care about balance and they just
and there's
want...
just one that's much better.
Yeah, they just want logic and they're just like, yeah, if you just also had a gun in addition to a lightsaber, you would be better. Like, you'd be better off. There's no balancing. It's fine.
What? I think it was whatever the DC fighting game is. I think some characters just have a gun in that game. Like, that's their special. And that should be the win button, actually. Yeah. Like that.
Depending on how vulnerable people are to bullets.
You know? Yeah.
I feel like you can balance it based on enemies in that sense.
That, like, and that is part of it. Like, the lightsaber and the gun stance is like, you're almost like fencing with the lightsaber and then and shooting with the gun, obviously.
Right.
It's really, really good for like the standard type enemies. But the moment you run into one that has like a shield or like the big robot type enemies, it is really not effective at all.
But like, but it's different because like the options are lightsaber, gun, lightsaber and gun. So it's like how, in theory, it seems like all your bases should be covered. Whereas like in DC Universe, you can just make it where like, yeah, you either beat people up with your fists or you have a gun and like, maybe little tiny pieces of metal don't pierce the bullets, but like fists do, you know? But if you then made someone who's really good with beating people up with their fists and also just could use guns, it'd be like, yeah, there's no real weaknesses here. Like, there's no other way to do it.
Can you switch between the stances like pretty on the fly? Like, is that...
You can have two equipped at a time, and then there's certain places that you can switch them out. So you can have, you know, two lightsabers and like the lightsaber and a gun, or you can have like the lightsaber and a gun and then like the super long lightsaber, and or you can have like the double bladed one and then like the lightsaber and gun, but you can't have more than two equipped at once. And then at the save points, you can switch out which two you have equipped.
That is really good to hear. A game I'm about to go off on, Final Fantasy 16. One of my mechanical criticisms is that, like, you can't rotate abilities like in combat. Like, you can, and like some of the abilities are very clearly designed to, hey, this is when you're fighting a group of people, and this is like when you're fighting a boss or a mini boss. And yeah, was annoying that I've slacked into one route. There's a lot of Star Wars media. Does Jedi Survivor feel distinct, or like at least on like the upper, like a higher tier of that Star Wars media?
Yeah, this game and the last one did a pretty good job of like staying in that world but not drawing too much on like the source material. So it felt like somebody who hadn't watched all the movies or whatever could play these games and basically know what was going on, but they told the story that they wanted to tell without being too constrained by the rest of the media. Other than the time where about 2/3 of the way through the game, Darth Vader shows up and just fucking kills everybody and just ruins everything and like fucks up your whole plan and then goes away.
Wait, is this another Star Wars game where Darth Vader is like the boss? Is like, he's the big bad you gotta fight.
I mean, in not exactly. In the first game, you like have these people that you're trying to fight, and then at the end of it, it leads you to the area where like Darth Vader happens to be there, and you defeat the boss that you've been like trying to fight the entire game, and then you're like, yeah, I finally overcame the blah blah blah, and then Darth Vader walks through the door and shows you how much of a little bitch you are, and then you like barely manage to escape. And then in this game, it's like you get betrayed and that guy calls Darth Vader to just make sure that you can't follow him. And Darth Vader shows up and is like, oh, you guys. And then just still, again, like wipes the floor with you. And there's one person's like, I've been training for years for this to fight Darth Vader. And like they get a couple of good licks in. And then he's like, all right, time to stop this.
Okay,
just fucking ices him.
I kind of like that narrative design a lot, actually, that Darth Vader is like, yeah, no, this is like an unwinnable boss fight. Like, that works, actually. That works for me.
There is something about like that impotent rage, too, of just like, I don't know. It's fun for me in like football, for example, when a team is like, we're going to build ourselves specifically to beat this one team. That's our whole goal. we have to get over the hump and beat this one team. Actually, it happens in basketball more than football. And then they just go to war and they just fucking lose. And they're just like, what am I? Like, yeah, like that guy in his final moments losing to Darth Vader, just like, what was this all for? Like, holy shit.
And I have one last question about Jedi Survivor. As is tradition on the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, Andrew, what is the... How do they explain that the main character is no longer hot shit, doesn't have access to all the abilities of the first game?
No, he does.
Oh!
That's one of the things that I really appreciated about it was, like, you come in and it's like you still have everything that you learned in the last game. And you've been, like, getting even better over the last 5 years since you saw this character. And he's like, a total fucking badass.
Okay.
But, like, he's been fighting the Empire the whole time, and it's just not working because of the just ever-encompassing oppression of that system. So then he has to, like, go off and try to do something else. And you, like, learn a couple more abilities as the game goes on that make traversal easier, and you learn some cool shit. That's cool. But yeah, no, they don't take away any of your shit. You start off ahead of where you were in the last game, and then you learn even more.
I love it. More games do this, please. All right, it's finally time. I got credits on Final Fantasy 16. If you go online, check out a lot of video game websites, a lot of people are doing rankings of Final Fantasy games now. And they're putting Final Fantasy 16, like, pretty middle of the pack, like dead center between the other 15 mainline Final Fantasy games. They're cowards. They're cowards with recency bias. Final Fantasy 16 might be the worst Final Fantasy game. It's certainly the worst I've ever played.
Damn.
Yeah.
Fucking sucks, dude. Sorry.
Yeah, I am mad. I'm big mad about this.
People were stoked for this, I remember.
I was stoked, yeah. Hey, guess what the solution to slavery is in this game?
What?
Hey, people are slaves because they're magic. Where are you going to make magic not a thing anymore? There's no, like, abolitionism. There's no... How are we going to change the infrastructure of this world? How are we going to invent stuff that, like, makes it...
They just
it
committed
so that...
genocide, basically. Cultural genocide or whatever.
I... Kinda, yeah. Just like, hey, oh, no more magic. No reason to make these people slaves anymore.
So wait, the people with magic are the ones that are the slaves?
Yeah.
Shouldn't they be... Yeah, way more happened. Powerful than...
So, like, there are tiers of how magic you can be in Final Fantasy 16. There are the normies who have zero magic. There are the people who are... They got a little magic. A little magic. Like, they can make fire. They can make lightning a little bit. It
seems,
hurts.
Like, useful for not getting enslaved.
But then there are the people that can transform into kaiju god monsters, basically, and they're not enslaved. They're cool. they're hot shit in most societies.
So non-magic people are enslaving the, like, baby magic people.
Yes.
But the super magic people are also in on it.
Super magic people are, like, above it all. Like, they're not even in the system. Is that fair? They're like gods.
Yeah, they're politically allied, but they're also like, yeah, no, they're doing great. They have their own, like, fiefdoms, and they're fine. Just one of them at the beginning is like, hey, maybe slavery shouldn't exist at all, because really, what's the difference between me being very magic and people who are a little? But, like, yeah, no, largely people are unquestioning of the system.
Is there, like, a huge population difference between, like, the people that are not magic at all and the people that are just a little magic? Are there just, like, few of them, and that's why they're, like,
correct,
overpowered?
Yes. And, like, okay. Admittedly, the lore writing in this game is pretty good. The character and, like, actual narrative of the game, not really, but the lore writing, pretty good. And there is stuff in there about how, like, yeah, there used to be more magic users, but then there was a war, a lot of the magic users died, and then the surviving non-magic users were like, so we're gonna make them a lower class of people, so that doesn't ever happen again.
So it's like the forgotten plot line of Looper. Do you guys remember that?
No.
Like,
what?
You know, there's people that are, like, magical.
I never saw that movie.
You never saw Looper?
No.
Oh, damn. Yeah, some people are like little baby magic. Like they can't actually like do all that much with it, except for like one guy. Spoiler alert. And like everyone else is just like, oh, I made this coin hover, and they're like, don't show that. You'll be oppressed because you're a little magic-y.
Does it have anything to do with the plot of the movie?
Yeah, it interweaves.
Okay.
It interweaves into the time travel of just like, oh, these people are being oppressed. Like, we need to be careful of that because then it'll get out of control, man. And then they do. And yeah, you'll see. You should watch it. It's a good movie. Don't think about the time travel too much, but it's a good movie.
Oh, we learned that from Zelda. Don't think about the time travel too much.
No, like genuinely. I think at one point of the movie, Bruce Willis sits down and is like, stop. like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, what about like this thing? And Bruce Willis is like, all right, we're just not gonna shut the fuck up. It's the Armageddon where I can't remember who it was that asked Michael Bay, just like, wait, isn't it easier to train astronauts to drill for oil than to train oil drillers to be astronauts? And he's like, shut the fuck up, like this is my movie. You need to shut the fuck up.
I think it was Ben Affleck.
Yeah, it was Ben Affleck. Yeah, he told that story. He's just like, and I did. I was like, all right, good enough.
Also, by the back third of the game, like, no, we're so far away from like the politics of slavery being a thing. Like, no one's talking about it. Like, there's a point in the game where like this dude allies himself with the main character, and this dude's entire motivation is, yeah, my dad died unfairly and I want to go avenge him. His dad was a piece of shit. His dad enslaved the main character for like a decade, and also killed the main character's dad, kinda. That never comes up. That's never a conversation. That's never tension between two of these characters. Combat just barely comes together in the closing hours of the game. Like, it's labels itself as an RPG is kind of like about resource management on some level. That's barely a thing here. Like, you are barely filling meters in a way that is any kind of strategic in Final Fantasy 16. And I'm mad about
it. Barely filling meters. This is trash game for trash people. There's like 3 meters and you barely fill them.
Ryan, that is generous. There are only 3 meters because I made the decision to play in a way that had 3 meters.
That's a lot of meters. I don't know how many meters. I think 2 meters is the maximum amount of meters I've ever had in a video game.
But in Final Fantasy game, that's like the core of the design, that you are creating opportunities. You are juggling these different resources being filled or deplenished to do like maximal damage on a turn or through a strategy. And like there's just not a lot of strategy in this game. And like, it's a character action game, and that's fine. I shouldn't hold to the standards of previous Final Fantasy games, but also it's not good by character action game standards. It's just bad. Combat sucks.
I'm genuinely thinking now, though, like, I really do think 2 is my max, like health and armor,
mm-hmm.
or like health and energy, or like health and magic. I don't think I've ever had 3 meters in a game that I've played.
Are there
I'm such a normie?
Are there like meters quietly, or what could be described as meters quietly happening in the background of Madden? Well, there might be a lot of
are actually. It's just that they don't really come into play, like pass blocking meters and like
the
pass rush moves. Yeah, exactly. There's like skills that like extend those or make them recover quicker, and it's like I don't care.
It's different because there's all individual players and you can choose to ignore them. Like, yeah. I play with linebackers on defense and quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers on offense. Like, I basically never touch the line stuff. I guess you could argue momentum, but yeah, really it's just stamina. Like, that's the only real meter on Madden.
And you still you don't see it. It's just a thing that you can tell when it's low.
No, there's a bar at the bottom.
Really?
Yeah. Andrew, we're learning things. Yeah.
Like as you're running, you can, there's a bar that you see and you can see it go down.
Yeah. It's like really tiny at the bottom and it's just like color. Yeah. It's on the, it's like the ring that shows you what player you're controlling. It's like at the bottom of the ring.
Oh, that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's your stamina.
Okay.
The writing and like more broadly the different elements of this game are so wildly inconsistent that I am curious about the production of it, because it seems like there were five different teams who just never talked to each other in the production of this game. There are several set pieces where it's like, oh man, this boat is sailing away and we got to kill these guys and then get on the boat before it leaves and we're left behind and it's supposed to be this big tense moment. Two of the people involved in this can just fly. Like, they can just transform into things that can fly. And that is never... And I know that's like a CinemaSin-style criticism of this, but it is so immersion-breaking that I don't know what's going on here. The game looks fantastic. Some of the art direction, phenomenal in this. Even though I think it gets to a weirdly uncanny place with the graphics, with the style it's going for. Maybe trying to be a little too realistic, but like... Wow, this is a miss for me in a way that's really disappointing. Also, I think Leviathan, like the Final Fantasy staple summon Leviathan, was supposed to be in this game. But then there's just a throwaway line of dialogue that's like, ah, Leviathan, the lost. We don't know where it is. And, like, it's, and it comes back later. Is that being like critically relevant to the story? Like, I think the bad guy needs all of the... like god monsters to resurrect or what, except the one I don't fucking know with this one. I'm exhausted by it.
So the Leviathan is magic. He's like big magic.
Oh yeah, big time magic. Yeah,
he's big magic.
BME, big magic energy.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people are thinking that Leviathan is gonna be the focus of whatever DLC this game get. This game ain't getting DLC. No way. Are we ready to talk about Barbie?
Hell yeah.
I'm ready.
Good movie.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Ryan? Lucas has thoughts. Lucas has critiques. Ian had a critique, and it was, it's good. That's literally what he said at brunch this morning. He was like, yeah, everyone can, like, you're allowed to have critiques. My critique is, it's good. It's like, oh, what a brave critique you gave.
Was he saying that as in like, I'm not like, there is no room for critique because it's just good? Or is he saying like, my critique is that it's good but not great?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just good. Don't want to go any further.
Oh,
it's all
okay.
Good.
I think, and that has kind of happened with this movie a little bit, I think, where conservatives went so hard against it that it's like, well, how can we talk about this without having like our progressive cred questioned? How can we critique this without having our progressive cred questioned? I know what I'm about. And I can say that, yeah, no, I love this movie. Fantastic performances, great casting, phenomenal set design. I think it was a little bit feminism 101. I think it could have dug deeper into some of those themes and ideas a little bit.
There were people at my company that were saying the same thing. And yeah, I guess maybe I just didn't have any expectation of that at all going into it. And it was just like, yeah, this is going to be, you know, just a basic feel-good movie that talks about some of these fucked up things going on in our society. You know, like, gets a little existential with it, but not too existential because, yeah, it's a blockbuster movie. It's a summer blockbuster, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it for that expectation, it really delivered.
Yeah, I thought it was like, I mean, for one thing, I thought it was really funny. I don't know if you guys like appreciated the jokes much as I did, but like I thought it was like a really, really funny movie.
Yeah.
But like,
I laughed out loud at least a dozen times, which is, that's like a comedy. If it does that, it's pretty good.
Right. And it had other stuff going for it besides the comedy. And like a really fun movie. The people in the movie clearly had like a great time making it. The like the childlike nature of all this Barbie world shit I thought was really cool. And then it had a lot to say. I think sometimes it like had too much to say, especially towards the end. It got kind of like wrapped up in a lot. Like the message was like encompassing a lot. So I think it got kind of like a little twisted there for a bit, but like didn't take too much away from it.
The montage of America Ferrera saying, feminism 101 stuff is inspired a lot of my feelings about that. I really liked the subversion of the trope of her mean girl daughter just being correct about like, hey, Barbie just makes women feel bad about themselves kind of for the sake of capitalism. Which awesome. Outside of that, though, I'm not totally sure why that character was there. I don't know what she does after that.
I think kind of like for that reason to like show like, yeah, no, we can still say all this stuff about Barbie and like how it helped feminism and but like still at least acknowledge a little bit what it does to like body standards and like the cognitive dissonance of, you know, you're expected to be able to be an astronaut, but also be super hot and, you know, have kids and do all this shit just like Barbie does. But yeah, it's.
I didn't care for the joke of when Margot Robbie's Barbie is having a breakdown and just saying that under patriarchy, she just feels terrible and hates herself and it feels like she is ugly. And then the narrator chimes in after like an hour and a half of not doing anything to be like, hey, note to director, if you want to make this point, don't cast Margot Robbie as
Barbie.
That
was funny.
Yeah, I laughed.
It was funny, but the better joke and the more meaningful point is that like, no, even Margot Robbie feels like she is ugly under the patriarchy, and that is, I don't know, so much more true and darkly funny if you just let that delivery stand without a chime in quip.
No one would have laughed.
Yeah.
No one would have laughed at Margot Robbie saying, I feel ugly. Like, if you're trying to make it a joke, if you're trying to make it funny, yeah. Having Helen Mirren pop in and give a note that definitely Greta Gerwig gave of just like, does this work? Does this land? Like, I don't know about that.
I think it lands. I think it works better. It's more of a thinker, but I think deeper if you don't have that quip in there.
I think it would just get lost in the rest of the commentary. Like, it would just be another notch in the belt of like patriarchy bad. And instead it's like, here's an opportunity to bring a little levity to the situation. So
don't give me levity. The movie has plenty of levity in it and I like it. But I don't know.
It's got plenty of like dark, serious shit too.
This is the guy who wanted more body horror from Annihilation. Just
that's
like,
what I'm
saying. Less jokes in this comedy movie. Yeah.
The Kens were fantastic.
Yeah, the Kens were also really, really good. Yeah.
I like that Simu Liu is an asshole because I feel like he's an asshole, right?
Didn't some stuff come out about him?
Yeah.
His Reddit
profile.
I think it's kind of weird though because he's one of those guys who has made his Hollywood persona like he's just your classic super good guy. Like his whole thing is about how likable and how like good of a guy he is. But
interesting.
Yeah, maybe trying too hard to like push the scent off his trail.
I mean, I think they found it, right? Because he did an AMA with his Reddit account. That's how they found Simu Liu's Reddit account. I'm pretty sure. Like it's like when that Ken Bone did the same thing. Like
yeah.
Ken Bone fucking did an AMA with his Reddit account and everyone was like, Ken Bone, what the fuck, dude? What are these comments? Holy shit. So
what is the impulse? I don't understand like I'm kind of famous now. Better get on Reddit. Like that doesn't
No, they were on Reddit. That's why. Okay. That's why it got so fucked up is they've been on Reddit for years and years as an anonymous Redditor.
And probably a publicist said, hey, do an AMA.
Yeah, do an
Ask
Me Anything
on
Reddit.
Good idea.
And they're like, cool, I'll sign in and say, I'm this person with this account. And then people click that account. And most of the time, it's like Jamie Foxx Searchlight Films. Like it's never been posted before. It's a brand new account. And then they just answer questions. But people clicked and they're just like, whoa, this dude's been here for years and ooh, here's some stuff. So
Michael Cera, fantastic in this film. We gotta make more roles for Michael Cera.
Make more roles.
He's hard to cast. Like, it's weird. Yeah,
he's Michael Cera, and
he's a cis white dude. And you're like, we need to make more roles.
If he can't get them,
it's his own fucking fault. He plays that one role really well,
but it is kind of the only role he can play.
Yeah.
But like the same way that, like, hey, Will Arnett only got big after BoJack Horseman because that's a Will Arnett type role. He's perfect for that. And like, he's very talented and like a good, interesting performer. I feel like Michael Cera has those chops, and I want, like, what do you cast Michael Cera in? Like, there's no, yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason he doesn't work that much. Cause like, yeah, it was fun when he was an awkward high schooler. Now he's a fucking 35-year-old
man,
weird looking dude. I said it at breakfast and I'll say it again. Man looks weird, all right? It's fine. Not everyone has to be a famous actor. It's okay. If you don't have roles, you don't have roles. I'm not going to shed a tear for a cis white guy who doesn't work as much as he used
to. That's fair.
It's fine. It's no big deal.
Well, I'm like not shedding tears for him. It is a travesty that Michael Cera doesn't get more work. I'm just like, hey.
I'm not shedding tears. It is a travesty.
I'm not saying that.
It was one of your takeaways from Barbie, the feminist, like, important movie by women for women. You're like, Michael Cera really needs some more work.
If we want to get into a genuine criticism of Barbie, like,
here we go.
kind of weird that the whole thing is like Barbie's. This ends with Barbie becoming a person. It is a journey of her gaining an identity in relation to her womanhood. Not very well defined. Not like, yeah, what is Barbie like by the end of that movie? Who is Barbie?
I think that was the entire point. It was that
she was
generic Barbie and like struggled with that whole thing of, I don't have anything specific. I'm just blonde woman. That's all I am. And I need to try to figure out what I am and what I fill that blank space in with. So then she becomes a real person.
Yeah, there's a sequence in Weird Barbie's house, like, yeah, around the America Ferrera monologue, where she's like shows great emotional intelligence, and Weird Barbie's like, that sounded pretty legit. Like, I think that, yeah, she comes along as like a very compassionate, emotionally intelligent person. Like, and that, yeah, from a just blank slate, like no-namer who has no anything. Like, you think of the scene in the beginning with Ken, when Ken's asking to stay over, and she's like, it's girls' night, and like completely oblivious to the fact that he is fucking devastated by every word coming out of her mouth, to like, no, a very emotionally intelligent, capable person who has a lot of compassion for even someone like Ken, who is essentially burning down everything she knows and loves, and being like, but I understand how he's feeling and want to make sure that he gets into a better place. Like, I think that's where she arrives at. But yeah, at the end of the day, is somewhat of a blank slate, because that's where she's coming from and has kind of started her journey towards being a real person, and has like the starting blocks, but is still not completely defined. So, I don't know. Maybe I like the movie more. It's okay.
And like the whole thing at the beginning where she was like, yeah, I'm getting cellulite and flat feet and like going through some mental stuff. And, you know, Weird Barbie does the whole Morpheus thing, like take the red pill or the blue pill. She's like, no, give me the blue pill. So like, give me the blue pill. I want to just be hot and like not have anything else going on. He was like, well, no, that's not an option.
Yeah, that wasn't like, ever an option. What are you talking about?
All she cared about was being vapid and hot. And like by the end of the movie, like that's not a priority anymore. Like everything else is. So yeah,
she had the option to go back to being vapid and hot. That Will Ferrell literally says that. He's just like, everything's perfect. You can be Barbie again. And she's like, I don't think that's me anymore.
Kate McKinnon, perfectly cast as Weird Barbie.
I think pretty much everybody was perfectly cast.
Genuinely, like the casting was unbelievable.
Ryan Gosling as Ken, like, just fucking nailed it.
Did you hear why he ended up as Ken? Like, it was like floated to him, because this has been in development hell for like over a decade. And it was like floated to him, and he wasn't sure. And then he saw his daughter, who had like all sorts of Barbie dolls, was like playing near the sandbox, and came over after she left, and Ken was face down in the sandbox, just all alone. And he was just like, I think I want to tell this guy's story. Like, who the fuck is this guy that's just completely forgotten about and no one cares? Like, he's just Ken. It's Barbie and Ken.
So, but he's Kenuff.
He is Kenuff by the end.
It's dumb to do ratings, but this is solid 7 out of 10 movie for me.
I gave it an 8.
Yeah, I was like more in like the 8 out of 10. Like, this is in the running for best stuff of the year. Like,
yeah, it's just tied for the best that I've seen so far this year. So
yeah, I just love Greta Gerwig, and I think that like you said, the casting was so spot on. Performances were amazing. It was legitimately funny. And I think that it does still have a good message. Like I was saying at brunch, like we were in Indonesia at a Barbie exhibit, and we're all, you know, like it's popping. Like there's people everywhere and they're all dressed in pink and they're having fun and they're taking pictures. And like, yeah, there's like women in hijabs, like wearing pink and celebrate. Like, you know, we might think it's feminism 101, but like, that doesn't mean that it's not an important
movie for a lot of people.
It's not a necessary message that some people might need to hear, you know, like that's, I don't know. I liked it. Thought it was cool.
We do live in a world where God, and actually in parts of America, like women having jobs, that is in itself subversive and empowering.
A woman not wanting to have kids in most parts of the United States is still kind of taboo. I just think that it's feminism 101 does not mean that it's not a crucial message for that type of movie that's going to reach a mass audience.
Yeah, like the three of us are in a bit of an echo chamber, I think, sometimes with, you know, what our world is like, and it's definitely not how it is for the vast majority of people. So yeah.
I mean, there's some great messages about masculinity in there too, like just genuine, like, hey, most of what you associate with being a man gets toxic pretty fucking quick, you know, like there is such a thing as non-toxic masculinity, and masculinity in and of itself is not problematic. Like that weird Fox News, like they're attacking anyone for being a man. Like that's bullshit. It's this idea that like, this is what being a man is all these toxic things that needs to be examined and expelled from culture in general. But like, just like being like, horses are what it means. Like, you know, that idea. I am my truck. I am my job. Like that's bullshit, man. Like,
yeah, I'm having a brewski beer. That's fucked up. Like, it's...
yeah. Ken's Mojo Dojo Casa House.
That's what, hey, you know that stuff about masculinity you are super into? Maybe kind of gay. Maybe a little gay, even.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, gay is not anti-masculine.
Yeah. It's,
those two things can coexist.
Being gay, having that be your entire personality, is not healthy. Being straight, having that be your entire personality, is obviously not healthy. Like, yeah, like these facts about you or these things that you like are not who you are. And if you're thinking that way, you're probably emotionally stunting yourself. Like, you need to take that introspective look at like who you are and what you're about and think a little deeper.
I want to get a fake mink coat now. I think I can pull that look off.
Mink coat. The mink coat with the abs is just, don't know that I've ever seen it like that before.
Chef's kiss. Absolutely. So funny.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the Ryan, actually, maybe this is more for you. Have you heard the Behind the Bastards kidnapping two-part series?
Did.
Do you guys, okay, your partners, when they're sitting down having a little bit of phone time, like going through Instagram reels, never at the start of a sit down like that, but like 5 or 10 minutes in, do they start to get like women on Instagram talking about how they were almost kidnapped or about how they were definitely being stalked? Do y'all see any of that? Your partner see any of that?
Jade used to get that stuff all the time, and the algorithm has shifted, you know, more towards like just the weird, wacky shit post kind of stuff that Jade's into.
Yeah.
But yeah, there, like at one point at least, there was just constant, you know, true crime, you're in danger, you know, this is happening all the time, kidnapping, murder, all that kind of shit. Yeah.
No, I don't think Angel gets dogs.
Yeah.
The stuff she follows. I think I have heard it. Like, I've overheard coworkers talk about how, like, oh, this area of LA is super sketchy. Like, even though it's not like, you know, they're not saying like Compton, right, or something like that. Like, they're just, but like, oh, over by Century City Mall, like, it's so sketchy. They're like, sometimes, yeah, like, I've heard stories about people who, yeah, like they were talking about in the podcast about like things being put on their car. So then they like go to take the thing off and they get grabbed, like, while they're doing, you know, like, I've heard that in the office, like with other women. Like, it's clearly, yeah,
they're putting razor blades on the monkey bars.
No, it's not even like that. Like, if you listen to the podcast, like one of the comedic ones was like, they put cheese on the car, and then while you go to take off a single slice of American cheese, that's when they get you. Like, that's when the kidnappers strike. And it's just like, what? Like,
which is
like, it took me an hour to get rid of the cheese, and thank God I called my friend, because they would have gotten me in that hour. And it's just like, or it was a fucking high schooler who threw a slice of cheese on your car. Like, what?
That is the pinnacle of, like, 3 16-year-olds will think it is, yeah, hilarious to do this. Like,
right. Like, people are, yeah.
No,
it's,
yeah,
the idea of the podcast. It's fascinating. I loved the deep dive into, like, chain letters and how that type of, like, thought and everything dates back potentially thousands of years. Like, that's kind of cool.
Right. Maria had gotten a little bit of a trend of getting those types of videos on her Instagram. And then me being in a weird position of like, this is kind of weird, but also I feel odd as like a white guy being like, I don't want to invalidate like a woman's experiences or concerns, which I also think, and they talk about this a little bit, is how like that perpetuates,
right,
by not wanting to like tell people to be less alert in public spaces.
Yeah.
It's also good faith versus bad faith. If a close personal friend comes to you with a harrowing tale of how they almost got kidnapped, you're going to be much more sympathetic than when a big influencer who's doing it almost certainly, like, all of a sudden their channel explodes because of kidnapping content. Like, you can have a grain of doubt of like, I don't know that they're acting in good faith and genuinely reporting like what they think happened to them. And yeah, the story of the woman who directly accused two real people,
right,
of trying to kidnap her and her daughter. Like, yeah, I don't think she was acting in good faith. I think she wanted a story and wanted to be famous and found a way to make it happen. And then when the police called her out on it, it was like, oh shit, I gotta find a way to back this up.
So the point of this podcast wasn't talking about like actual kidnapping attempts. It was talking about like the way people are like faking kidnappings, or like just like faking, making up stories,
up stories, and like the mythology of like kidnapping culture,
yeah,
and
okay,
sex trafficking, and like explaining that like sex trafficking is very real. It's a serious thing that everyone needs to take seriously. Almost every single sex trafficking case in the United States is done by someone that the victim knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, these are not random strangers pulling up in a van, throwing you in the back, and you being shipped away to Egypt. Like, this is someone you know taking advantage of you. And most of the time, it's people under the age of 18. People yeah, with no self, you know, ability to
agency.
Yeah, and deal with things themselves, being taken advantage of.
Yeah, it's like, so, I mean, a lot of the times it's, you know, someone's boyfriend who says like, oh, you're so pretty, I bet you can make so much money,
yeah,
on like OnlyFans or something, let me manage it for you. And they just like keep all the money and then like have their documents so they can't really get away and that kind, yeah, of stuff.
That's what Andrew Tate did.
Hey,
yeah,
openly and actively.
Yeah, just says this was a cool way to make money and you should do it too.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, that was what I think the core of it was like, yeah, we're not saying that it never happens. We're not saying that everyone reporting this stuff is doing it in bad faith. We're just saying that the spread of this misinformation is causing everyone to live in a scarier, sadder world, basically. That, like, that at every corner is someone trying to kidnap you. And he then contrasted it with a real world thing that is genuinely everyone in the world is out to get you, of like scam callers, and how every time someone calls you and it's a scammer, it's an attack. Like, they are personally attacking you and trying to take your property away from you. Like, they, it is no different than someone robbing you on the street. And it happens so often that we've become kind of both desensitized to it, but also kind of internalized this like hostile world phenomenon that like everyone is actively in danger at all times, and then applied it to this other stuff. And and I like the way he opened the podcast of just like a story of a person who murdered her Uber driver in El Paso because she saw signs for Juarez and just thought that he was kidnapping her and taking her to Juarez, Mexico. And so she pulled out a gun and shot him in the head. And when you hear that, you think, oh, it's like a QAnon crazy who has no idea of any of this stuff, like, and thinks that, yeah, he's an illegal immigrant that's going to kidnap her and everything. And no, it's a Black woman with no prior history of any of that stuff. And it just, you know, it got to her, like all the stuff about kidnappings and everything like that. It gets to you. It doesn't matter where you fall necessarily in the political spectrum, like, because that's what you, that's what I first thought. I was just like, okay, this is going to be all about QAnon and all that fucking bullshit. And then it's like, no, it's kind of different than that.
It, boy, people are living in just a different reality than us, and maybe like, right, just about everyone we are immediately close with. And that is,
and so are we.
Yeah,
we live in a different reality than objective reality, for sure. Like, right, our social media messages, like, we didn't, the world didn't become worse around 2016 when I feel like all of us were like seriously politically awakened. Like, that was just when everything started to really get through to us that, like, holy shit, this is real. Like, this struggle is real, real. It's not just like a thing, you know, just another aspect of reality. So, but that's, you know, it's how we perceive it.
Good series. Good couple of podcast episodes that people should check out. Also, PSA, like, you're never, if you're listening to this, you're not going to get kidnapped. Like, you're, yeah, almost assuredly, like, that's not a thing that's going to happen to you.
It's the reverse winning lottery. Mm-hmm. If you're not traveling to areas on like the U.S. government's no travel zone, like,
yeah,
you're going to be okay. Like, well, I get it. Stay alert. 100%. We're not saying that you're not ever in danger in a public space. Like, be smart, especially in areas that are relatively unknown to you. Like, be vigilant, and it's always good to protect yourself, but like, yeah, we can all rest a little easier than we might think.
Maybe don't go to North Korea. Maybe, yeah, if you're a queer person, don't go to a place even within the U.S. if you can help it, where your identity is like a crime. You're not, and even then, even if you are going to a place that is different, not America, like, unless you are a noteworthy, exceedingly wealthy person, like, you're fine.
Yeah. That was another example. I think it was on Fox News, right? The woman that got kidnapped in Mexico, and they're just like, this is an example of how fucking dangerous it is and how everyone's getting kidnapped on the street. And then they ignore that in the initial reporting, they're literally saying, like, this was a targeted kidnap. Like, they, the person who was kidnapping her knew her, and it was, yeah, a targeted thing. He stalked her for weeks, and it wasn't just like a random, like, oh, look, white woman kidnapped. Like,
yeah, so, even like that shooting that happened where there was like, I think, 4 Americans killed, although no, like, 2 of them were killed and 2 of them actually made it back. It was like a case of mistaken identity. They had gone to Mexico because one of them was going to get a surgery, because our healthcare system is totally fucked, and it's cheaper to just drive to a foreign country and get it there. And these gang members saw them and were waiting for a similar car that had four people in a rival gang that looked like them, like kind of matched their description, and they opened fire and killed a couple of them. And then immediately were like, shit, these are the wrong people. This was not our intention to just shoot random people on the street. We were trying to shoot specific people on the street.
Yeah.
And they like the gang issued an apology to the families. Like, we never intended this. We're sorry. And, like, it's fucked up, but it is very rare to just be a victim of
random violence
like that. Yeah.
And that's also like, that's also not like a only in Mexico kind of thing. That is a story that can easily happen in the US too. Like that.
Yeah.
Also, there's a new season of What We Do in the Shadows. Ryan, I'm sorry we broke our tradition of watching that together. I don't know if it's, I don't know if What We Do in the Shadows is peak anymore, but I don't know. It's kind of embracing that. It's kind of embracing that this season by leaning into some themes of, hey, it's really hard to change, like, as people. Like, it's hard to be better or different at the very least. And, yeah, some of the ways it's exploring that this season are pretty fun and interesting.
Yeah, I've only seen the first three episodes so far. I gotta catch back up. But, no, I still think it's fun. I still think that they're having a good time. I like that Colin Robinson is an adult again. To me, that's always peak. Like, yeah, it was fun when he was a kid and a teenager for like one joke. And then it was like, all right, I don't know. I don't care that much. It's fun when it's really close to home, his energy vampiring. And I know that the next episode I'm seeing the campaign where Colin is going to run for office. So I'm sure we're going to get some great Colin moments there that I haven't seen yet.
Ryan, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a moment, I think later this season, where Colin Robinson has the opportunity to be a local news weatherman.
Oh boy. That sounds pretty good.
It was pretty good. And, did you see the stuff with the doll?
When the doll switched bodies with Nadia?
It's a good dumb bit. Yeah.
And she's trying to have sex with Colin, and Colin's like, you go back in the doll. This isn't working for me. Yeah. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Good show. Very funny. Mm. I'm glad it exists.
Yeah. And I'm glad this podcast exists and that all of you tuned in to listen to it. Thank you for the support. And if you'd like to support us more, you can support us on Patreon. Oh God, like, we just looked into this. This changed. Thank you, Sucky Badger and Tiffany Cole. Goodbye, Richard Nixon. Thank you two specifically for supporting us. If you like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, etc. Actively link in the description to help some great causes. Follow us on Twitter at @D2_podcast. Follow me at @LucasDeWriter on Twitter. Keep up with everything on my end, live streams I've been doing for my job at Fandom. Had Lindsay Loveridge, the executive editor of Anime News Network, on last week, and that was a phenomenal and informative interview. Learned a lot about that platform's journalistic processes, and also what they consider anime, which is a more contentious question than what you would think it is. Also follow me on Blue Sky. I'm Lucas DeWriter there too. I'm killing it on Blue Sky, guys. Like, I'm doing numbers. You got to get on Blue Sky to see. Yeah.
We don't have an invite link, Lucas.
I can give you an invite link. You just got to say. You just got to be like, yeah, I want that invite link.
You didn't offer. I think we brought it up in the past and you said no.
I have not been offered. You offered it in a way that did not make it seem like you actually had invite codes. You said something along the lines of, you know, I can try to get you guys invite codes if you're really nice to me, or like some shit like that. And I didn't think that was serious.
No, me neither.
What does this say? Two invite codes. Guys on the podcast.
Where would we see that? We're not on Blue Sky. How would we know that you had them?
I've been very clear. I've been very vocal about hooking people up with Blue Skies.
I think I'm in the same boat as Andrew.
It just really sounded like it was sarcasm.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to get you guys on the skyline. I want to be skeeting with my mutuals. Let's go.
What?
You would know this if you were on Blue Sky. I can get you on Blue Sky.
Jesse, what the fuck are you talking about?
All right, so it sounds like I'm about to use up two of my only two currently Blue Sky invites. But
how do you earn a Blue Sky invite? What does it take?
Sacrifice
a goat to Jack, whatever his name is.
It's a pyramid scheme. Everyone gets two Blue Sky invites, and they have to invite two people, and then those two people both have to invite two people.
I think there might be some element of like the more active, the more like engaged your account is, the more codes. I think it's just every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks you get a new invite code.
Lucas is like, it depends on your numbers. It depends on your influence. It's every 2 weeks, guys. There's nothing special. I've just been on it for 4 weeks.
Also, this episode is going to be titled "We're Skeeting on the Skyline Now." That's what this is. You're welcome, America. You're welcome, world. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Goodbye.